Betsy, hey! Hey, just calm down. It's okay.
You're right.
It's okay.
Everything will be okay.
Yeah.
I just need one of these.
Pills? You mean you really are taking drugs?
I need them.
Jesse, give me those.
I need them, Zach! I have to sing!
Jesse! You can't sing tonight.
Yes, I can! I'm so excited! I'm so excited! I'm so scared!
Just
pause. Other than that being an Oscar-worthy performance, we are talking about Saved by the Bell because I think we all grew up in an era of just really great television for young people, so full of life lessons. And Saved by the Bell recently got put on Netflix. I've been watching it, and it just sparked an idea in me of, like, what are kids watching in today's day and age, and what messaging is it giving them? So we're going to get into that conversation today, and I'd love to know, drop it in the comments. Are you an A.C. Slater girl or a Zach Morris girl? Are you a Jesse guy or a Kelly Kapowski guy? Drop it down below. Let's get into it. Young Apollo with the bullet. Alright guys, we're back. So, as I said before, I've been watching a lot of Saved by the Bell on Netflix. It's been helping me go to sleep. The nostalgia is just everything for me. And they just recently put on a bunch of older shows, a lot from like my generation, my time, Victorious, iCarly, Ned's Declassified, School Survival Guide, all that, all these types of shows that I watched. I'm not sure.
I mean, I watched all that, and I watched Saved by the Bell, Boy Meets World,
right?
All those good old wholesome things. I'm glad they're putting them out there again so that our younger generations, I mean, even younger than you, really, can experience something wholesome as opposed to some of the things that they're seeing today, which we will get into.
Wholesome really is the word that just encapsulates all the TV, I feel like, that came out of that era. Wholesome is the word. Scott, what did you watch?
All of the ones that Taylor mentioned. I mean, it's to a T. Plus the cartoons, you know, you had the original Batman cartoons, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the X-Men, you know, they had those exact same wholesome lessons within them.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like since I was born in 2000, I got a little bit of like the 90s kid era, and then I got a little bit of like the early 2000s kid. So I got a healthy mix of both. But in watching things like Saved by the Bell, I've noticed just every single episode is packed with like this wholesome message. And these kids are in high school, and you're watching them and just thinking like, well, I think they start off in middle school, but they end up getting into high school. And you're watching them and thinking, this is not at all what high school experiences look like on TV at all. Like, the first thing that I think of in comparison to Saved by the Bell is a show like Euphoria, which is following high school age kids who are doing drugs, sleeping with each other, questioning their sexuality. Not so much the gender conversation in Euphoria, but a lot of just very graphic, full frontal nudity, drug use, drug abuse, just things that you see that you would have never seen, or at least not in the manner that you see it in any TV show from the early 2000s or the 90s. Like, that was as crazy as drug use got, Jesse getting addicted to caffeine pills.
Caffeine pills?
Like, oh my gosh.
Horror.
I'm so excited.
Compare that. I don't know if you ever watched it. I know you didn't, Amala, but Nick at Night. Do you
remember
all of those shows?
I watched Nick at Night.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You had like, what I would turn on Nick at Night, what would come on? Like George Lopez would be.
Oh, yeah.
And even that, being an adult show, that was a show for adults largely. The Nick at Night shows were like shows that you put your kids to sleep and then Nick at Night stayed on and you watched it. Those were really wholesome. They didn't have any sort of like full frontal nudity. They didn't really talk about drug abuse other than like, oh, the daughter starts experimenting like smoking weed on the weekends or something like that.
Right. It's like Kenan and Kel and Are You Afraid of the Dark? It was
like
a little bit of spookiness was the extent of what made it like adult. The adult time or the nighttime shows.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and you watch them and you can tell that they're people were making TV with a purpose. Like they were trying to come at you with a conflict that you might experience in your daily life with your family, with your friends, with your peers, and resolve it by the end of the episode and sort of bring that to you in a way that it's manageable for you, especially for young people to watch, you know, these older kids go through all this conflict and then by the end come to their decision point where it made you not care about peer pressure or bullying or not be so self-conscious about yourself or ask you to dream big. So many life lessons that I feel like maybe kids are getting in today's shows, and maybe we're just removed.
Maybe, but it seems to me like the shows back then tried to illustrate situations or and went out of their way to just give voice to experiences that basically everyone had everyone has in life. And so everyone experiences bullying. Everyone, like, we're going to see, like, maybe an episode of Full House where they deal with, like, insecurity about body image and things like that. And the lessons were always ones that no parent would have an issue with their kid learning. It was something that, like, harkened to very shared values and a shared cultural fabric that was like, okay, yeah, everyone needs to have these messages. And they're, again, there's like wholesomeness. Yeah. Whereas today's shows, it seems like the moral lessons, or when there is a lesson to be taught, it's things that they want parents not to know about, or they're trying to push a particular narrative that not all parents would agree with, but because we know better than you parents, we're going to put this in there.
Right. And just to harken back on, even adult programming was not as bad as child programming is today. Yeah. I looked up a list of Nick at Night shows, The Nanny, Malcolm in the Middle, George Lopez, Family Matters, Growing Pains, Home Improvement, Full House, Roseanne, The Cosby Show. These were shows that were meant for adults to be watching. And do you guys remember anything super crazy happening in those shows that wasn't like just a major life lesson that they were trying to explore, or something that is a real slice of life situation that people could have been in? I don't remember anything being...
No, of course not. And if they ever went that far, it was like a national scandal. And it's funny because, you know, when I was growing up, that this was just like thought of as normal. I didn't think of it as like this moralized sort of thing. And I had a perspective of like, oh yeah, I love Lucy and Leave It to Beaver and the Andy Griffith Show. Those are like the old-timey stuff with those old-timey values. And it was like wholesome, but it was kind of like this pat on the head. That's how the world used to be, but they don't understand how it is now in Boy Meets World era.
Yeah,
and the real
yeah.
things that we deal with. But looking back now, it's like, well, we kind of just became that Leave It to Beaver thing, but it does feel like wherever we are now is just fundamentally a different.
It is so crazy.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because even when, you know, Leave It to Beavers and all those, they seem kind of cheesy and pat on the head sort of messaging, it was still every situation, even when we were growing up, those pieces of content, every situation, whether it was a parent or a child or a teenager or whatever, was going through a character building moment.
Yep.
Every single episode. And you got to see them progress as a character throughout the seasons too. It wasn't as, you know, episodic as the series are these days, but you still got to see them grow as a person. And within each episode, you saw them take that step.
Right. And I think a lot of people will say, well, I'm watching shows right now that do exactly that, and people do progress in all these things. It just seems like the imagery is just much more heinous. Like, there's a lot more just crudeness to the way that shows are being made in this day and age. And we are going to go through some of the kids programming that is happening now. It might not be the exact right age market for what we're talking about in comparison to things like Saved by the Bell and Family Matters and George Lopez, but you'll get the idea of sort of what's being ushered in this new generation. And so many people have theorized that as societies sort of decline, it happens through the culture, it happens through media, it happens through Hollywood. And I can't think of a better way to express what's happening right now. But first, let's just access a little bit of our nostalgia and look at some clips that were social issues and life lessons that were presented in the show Full House.
Thing is, my dad does hit me sometimes, but it's my own fault for ticking him off. Boy, did he really clobber me last week.
You mean when you came to school with that black eye and you said you walked into a door?
Yeah, a door named Dad.
His father hits him. Bad.
But if you know this is happening and you don't say anything about it, you're only helping it happen again.
Well, some kids were calling Walter Berman Duckface. You should have seen it. The whole class was going quack, 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 quack.
Oh, yeah? Then prove it. Call him Duckface and throw him out.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to call him Duckface.
Oh, so he is your boyfriend.
Yeah.
He's not my boyfriend.
But he is my friend.
Oh, my art. My art.
That's so sweet.
And something that I recognize in like going back and watching these clips now is it didn't matter what age you were watching the show, you were going to get a lesson from somebody. And the shows were actually created so that no matter what age you were watching it, you could relate to one of the characters and you had sort of a direct connection to what was going on in their lives. Like, you might not have been attached to this. What was her name?
Stephanie,
right? But if you were older, DJ would have been the girl that you were looking at. DJ Tanner would have been the person you learned lessons from. Or if you were an older guy watching, maybe you were an Uncle Jesse, and that was who you were following, and you were going through his sexcapades, essentially. And there was just so many people that this marketed to and was just wholesome. Wholesome is just the word.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I think an interesting conversation to have around everything we're talking about today is just to what extent this reflects where our culture was, or mm-hmm. to what extent this kind of drove where our culture was, like in Hollywood today. You know, like there's a famous saying from I believe Andrew Breitbart that politics is downstream from culture. But right. I wonder, like, to what degree does what we see in the media make us our drive cultural change, or reflect our cultural change that's kind of happening beneath the surface anyways?
Yeah, it's tough to think about. I mean, I think this is more of just a reflection of what people wanted at the time and mm-hmm. what people were experiencing, which is even more devastating to think about what we're watching right now in TV programming. And if that's a reflection, then we're in a really, really bad spot. But what do you think, Scott? I feel like this was just giving American families what American families were dealing with.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing that kept popping up into my mind is also like this weird craze, I call it 10 years ago, people being obsessed with like the zombie culture. And that seemed to be kind of infiltrating this wholesome messaging. You know, mm-hmm. we still had it in the mid to late 2000s. It was still there. It was still at the forefront of media and film. And then all of a sudden we got interested in this like undead sort of like, hey, how can we make this as chaotic and viscerally gory and, mm-hmm. and disgusting as possible? And it was just like,
right.
how can we highlight the griminess of life and bring it to the forefront? And I feel like that was kind of this weird beginning shift in the audience's thought, or what they thought they wanted to see and experience.
Yeah.
And it's kind of just bled into all other types of media. I feel like it's just like, hey, let's make this raw, gritty. But I think it's more like, I don't know, distasteful and raunchy, gory, and again, visceral.
Right. I mean, it's like, it's sort of what we talk about with news, and maybe this is just the natural progression of media, because with news, we said, you know, the more salacious the headline, the crazier the story is, the more people want to watch it, but sooner or later, people are going to be desensitized to what you're showing them, so it has to get crazier, it has to get worse, it has to get more gory and insane for people to even want to click or see what you have to say, and that could very well be what's happened with media. Like, I think about the era of I Love Lucy, and it was super controversial to even show that Lucy was pregnant on the program back in those days. It was controversial to have them sleep in the same bed, which they did not do for a very long time. And naturally, we progressed outside of that, and now you can show a pregnant woman, and now the couples can sleep in the same bed. Not only can they sleep in the same bed, but now we can start having conversations about sexual relations, and now we can go from having the conversations about it to showing it, and then from showing it to just like expressing all of the weird inner working details of it. So is that just the natural progression of media?
I think it just reflects where we at as a culture. We're looking for what is the right place to establish those norms. And I think back in the more, you know, traditional times, they had, everything was very much on lockdown, boxed in. You mm-hmm. don't talk about certain things. Those are private matters. It's inappropriate, mm-hmm. all that. And we've obviously completely flipped that up on its head. In modern times, where I think we are now struggling to find, should any lines be drawn? And if so, where? And I don't think it's particularly one side of the political aisle who tends to be in control of Hollywood and be behind a lot of these shows really have any breaks. And I think that's why you get where you get shows like Euphoria, because it's just this, like, how, I mean, as you described it in more like this, in a zombie context, but Euphoria has that like grittiness and that raunchiness and that rawness. And I think it seems like rather than even, you don't even ask the question anymore, like, should we have any boundaries, or should there be things that we don't portray on screen? Or is it, oh, right, is there anything that's inappropriate? That's not even a question these days. And, no, or, and I think that's true on screen in the culture, but I also think it's true, like, in people's lives and in just how you think. Like, we have, we've covered a few stories where they're like redefining what it is. Like, the pedophile is a minor attracted person, and that's supposed to be an accepted sexual identity now. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously just like, I think we're just struggling to draw lines around anything and say that any behavior is inappropriate or any identity is inappropriate. Or, I mean, there just seems to be this complete devolution of moral standards at all.
Yeah, I think there's a point where we can get a little too open as a society. Yeah. There's a little too open-minded and not really placing boundaries where boundaries should be placed. I think a big thing that's happening right now, especially with children's programs, is not setting boundaries around what are conversations meant to have, that are meant to be had between a child and the parent. And now people in Hollywood and media are taking on that responsibility of, I'm the new parent, I'm going to teach kids what they should be learning if they're going to be watching our programming, and will instead have the conversations between the child and the TV rather than the parent and the child. And we are going to show some examples of that before we get into more older age content, things like Euphoria, which I'm sure a lot of you have been exposed to or at least heard about. Here's some child's content out of Disney Plus talking about microaggressions.
Skin is so much darker than hers.
Hold it. Did that comment make you feel uncomfortable? That's a microaggression.
What's a microaggression?
A microaggression is when someone says or does something that makes you feel bad, sometimes just because of your race.
Rise Up and Sing Out on Disney Plus. That's one of the series that they have on microaggressions, where they go through all these different things that you should and should not say in regard to somebody's race, in regard to somebody's skin color. And again, it's that, let's have a conversation that maybe parents and their kids should be having, and then we'll do it instead. And Disney has done that for quite some time. I think shows like Saved by the Bell and Family Matters and Full House had conversations too that families would typically have between a parent and a child. But there's something different about it, and maybe because it's so far removed from reality is why it sticks out to me.
Yeah, and they have to know that at least half of American households do not want their kids exposed to this stuff, yeah, right, and would have a great issue with that, but they just don't care. And I think that's the difference. So back in the day, true, you know, I think about a film like Top Gun Maverick is a modern day example. We've talked about a lot lately, but of just a movie that is like responsive to the market and made for everybody, mm-hmm, and not trying to push any particular ideology, but just very much like, hey, this is, it's like in the same way that back then they made kids shows and TV shows that like Full House, that it's just like very broad appeal, very like there's nothing controversial in there. It's just wholesome. Maverick is a wholesome movie.
Yeah.
And I think nowadays, though, we see there's like a bifurcation in Hollywood between market-driven film creation and shows and ideologically driven film, mm-hmm, creation and shows. And I think it's not, and the line is not in the middle, and the bulk, no, of the content that's coming out of there seems to be ideologically driven, to where it's almost like, we don't care if half of America doesn't like this, we're going to put this stuff in there because we want we think that we're right about morality. We think that we're right about how we shouldn't draw those lines where a lot of parents feel like they should be drawn. Yeah. And we don't care if the parents disagree. We're going straight for the kids, and we're going to expose them to these ideas and this way of thinking about themselves and seeing the world, because the way the parents see the world is not good enough. We disagree, and it's our job to educate them the way that we want to. And just one final thought on this, you know, I'm always tying things back to like the deeper things going on, it is in a Marxist framework, the people look at children as wards of the state before they are, it's the responsibility of the collective to educate children before it is the responsibility of parents to educate their kids, essentially.
Right, right.
And so that's where we see on like libs of TikTok, you see these teachers who are hiding from parents what they're teaching to young kids, and all these woke school districts that are incorporating this curriculum. And you even see teachers say, like, you know, it's parents, I don't care if you disagree with, mm-hmm, what I'm teaching your kid, it's my job to teach them. And that, what is that? That is a collective activist utopian sort of thing where it's like it's not your right as a parent to teach your child what you want to teach them, the values that you want to teach them and instill in them. It's my job as a member of society to incorporate your kid into the larger society, because collectively we have these values that we're trying to adopt and inculcate. And it's a very that's a fundamental distinction between mm-hmm. a worldview that's based on this, a sort of like leftist framework where it's a collectivist, and then the individualist worldview that America is kind of founded on.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that market conversation that you had of like, they don't care what market they're appealing to unless it's their market, and that's all that they'll go for. And what it's going to create, I think, is just going to be a massive cultural divide. And in 10, 20 years from now, the kids that grow up watching this stuff, I don't know if they're going to have that commonly shared childhood like we all have. Like, mm-hmm. even though we are a decade apart in age, we have very similar childhoods and upbringing for what we were exposed to through media. And it didn't matter. Race did not matter. White families were watching Family Matters just as much as they were watching Full House. And it was because the creators of these shows thought, okay, we are creating a family show for an American family, much like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and all these other things too. What is something that everybody experiences that we can inject into each episode? What is a conflict that every single person is probably going to experience at one point of their life or another? And how do we get that across all age spectrums, across all racial spectrums? And we sort of had just like this collective culture as an American society back then, and we've so lost that. We've so lost that.
Yeah, it's weird too to think. You were talking about the collective, right? And them pushing the narrative of the collective and what's best for the collective. It's interesting because also the way you described our media mm-hmm. growing up, it was like, okay, what
sort
is the
is collective.
Yeah, it's collective, but it doesn't strip away the individual,
right?
Because it still honors every person's individual take on that situation mm-hmm. In a very like nuanced and well done approach. And mm-hmm. it's just weird. The messaging today that's collectivism is exactly that, just ripping away the individual mm-hmm. first and foremost, so that you can then mold that amorphous blob of a person into what you want it to be.
Right. 100%. We're going to go through some more kids content of today. Here is a new show that's on Netflix called Dead End Paranormal Park, featuring, and I have to quote exactly how this character is described, Zach Barak as Barney Gutman, a gay teenage Jewish trans boy who works as a security guard at the park. By gay Jewish teenage trans boy, they mean biological girl who likes guys, but it's just now masculine. That's
so
literally all
girl.
It means. So basically a straight girl who's masculine. But here we go. Here's one of the videos that kids can watch on this particular TV show. It's a song called Some Guy, where Barney expresses his apparent crush on another man. Boy, I should say. It's not like he's gone. The yarmulke on and he's just some guy. And when he looks at me, I'm sure that all he sees is just some guy. I'm just some guy. This song is a banger, by
it's
the way.
It's great vocals.
This song is banger.
Go on, say it. Logs, Pauline is abducting impersonators. She abducted Jennifer Swan, and she's going to do it again. This whole comeback show is an act, a scam. She locked us up because we found out. I swear we have to stop her. Also, you're really cute. Want to go see a movie or something?
Huh? I knew it.
About Pauline?
No, that you wanted to ask me out.
There you guys go. Dead End Paranormal Park.
So wholesome.
So wholesome. So connected to the actual reality of living as a young kid. You know, if this is something that you want your kids to watch, and I should put the disclaimer for this entire episode, the onus is really on parents to decide what is right for your kids to watch and to show them whatever it is that you'd like to show them. I'm not telling you what you should or should not show your kids. But this messaging is so far removed from like what we would have got in Full House or Family Matters or anything like that. And it seems like they make a distinct effort to hide it. If you go and watch the trailer of this show, you do not hear an ounce of this, of a gay teenage trans boy dating other guys and a bisexual girl who's also featured in this show as well. You don't hear an ounce of that. And it says to me that they know it's not a true depiction of reality. And they know that they've injected ideology into it, but they just want to sneak it in under the rug.
Yeah, I mean, what's there to even say? I don't take issue with that, the fact that this exists, like you said, mm-hmm. in a free country, free society. If you're mm-hmm. a parent and you believe in all this stuff, and like, yeah, sure, you have the right to this. But like, the forces at work that are creating this do not feel organic. Do not feel like you're giving voice to the experience of a gay, Jewish, trans boy minor who I don't know how much of the, transition has happened, and we're meant to understand and for a minor. And so presumably, I mean, I don't know, you can read all kinds of things into this, but it's just
It leaves you speechless. It leaves you speechless. And you know, we talked about trans kids and all this stuff,
right.
And how that's inherently harmful. So this is inherently harmful. And again, it doesn't take away their right to make it, and it doesn't take away your right to watch it or to show your kids it. But you should know what the messaging is here. And it is an injection of something that is not true to reality. It is such a deviation. It's just so far removed from where we actually are, where kids actually are, and to have to inject this into a show in order to get it across shows the fault in your ideology.
Yeah, and it's interesting to your point earlier, Amala, about you saying they're sneaking it in kind of under the surface. You know, it wasn't mm-hmm. in the trailer, it wasn't overt or anything mm-hmm. like that. It's also I think they're also doing it in the sense that like the show is called paranormal, I forgot what it's called. Paranormal something.
Paranormal Park.
Right,
yeah.
Paranormal Park. And it seems like they're putting it in this setting where...
it's so kooky and everything's crazy.
Exactly. Everything's crazy and everything's like so out there, but it's okay. This is the real world. This is the kids' experience, but this is the way the world also is outside mm-hmm. too, and this is how you right. can act within it.
It's like they're trying to gaslight you into believing that, like, yeah, this is just a normal hat. This is mm-hmm. what, and the experience by anyone. And it's the opposite of, like, the Full House is, like, it taps into universal human experiences of coming of age and growing up. And this is a very niche thing that is really only experienced by people who adopt a particular ideology or way of viewing the world and viewing themselves and adopting right. a particular identity. It's like they're... it's not made to for you to identify with necessarily. It's like if you see this and all this is completely foreign to you, they want you to see that because they want this to become familiar to you. They want this to become the mainstream in society. Mm-hmm. So it's like we talked about the other day, like the theory. What my worldview, my belief, my concept of gender identity and all this stuff, I'm imposing that on reality. I'm imposing that. And the way this is a way that they're doing that is by putting it on a mainstream platform and trying to show this to as many people as possible.
100%. And like, maybe we are just detached from what kids are actually watching, but like, let us know if you're watching this right now and you have kids, what are they watching? Or if you are in the age of like our age when we watched Saved by the Bell, which was like 9 to 16, what are you watching on TV right now? And is it a reflection of your true experience? Or are you constantly having to shield yourself from the subliminal messages just to watch the shows that you watch? Because right now, I find that to be the case. Anytime I go on Netflix, Hulu, any of these things, and I turn on something to watch, and I'm like, okay, the plot's there. Oh, subliminal message. Let me shield myself from that. Oh, leftist dogma. Let me shield myself from that. And nearly every single thing. And they're so comfortable with doing it. Whereas the shows back in the day really wanted to be a catch-all for the American experience. And maybe it's because we don't have a shared American experience anymore, which is even sadder. Like, but we do, really. If we tried, we do. you know?
Yeah, well, it's a shared American experience, but also a shared American identity and values.
Right.
And I think those things have also been under assault in recent decades. And I think what we're seeing now is again, that shared cultural fabric that we've had has become so weak. Like, what if we just looked at one that this Instagram account with millions of followers, and it's like 25 reasons not to celebrate America this 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuff is becoming mainstream. That's more popular than the converse. And when you look, when you're just a random average teenager in America scrolling through social media, you see more anti-American rhetoric and things that denigrate traditional values and things that used to be the type of thing that we would see enshrined in Full House that's not celebrated. That's mocked and seen as some sort of oppression. And that's become more powerful in our culture these days than the converse.
Yeah. And it seemed as though these shows gave voice to all sorts of opinions. Like, one of the major conflicts or back and forths in Saved by the Bell, as I'm watching it, is Jesse and A.C. Slater, because Jesse is like this super pro feminist. You can't own a woman. She's not your property. And A.C. Slater's like this big macho guy. I take care of my girlfriend. And my girlfriend is like sort of more of a patriarchal take on things. And the shows gave voice to those opinions, let them go back and forth, and then at the end of the day said, we're both free to have our own opinion, and we're both free to lead our lives the way that we're going to lead them. Now it's like the feminist characters are just everybody in the show. They don't even give voice to the conservative opinion or just the traditional opinion. Or if they do, it immediately gets shut down in this, we just took down the bully, we took down the villain of this show now, when these shows were totally fine having people of differing opinions and just going, oh yeah, that's just a different way that you can view the world. I remember an episode that they did of Saved by the Bell where they're doing a science class and they're going to dissect the frogs, and the feminist, like, sort of eco-friendly character lets all the frogs go and she doesn't want to do it. And then at the end of the day, she just decides, okay, it's not something that I have to do, and the other students can do that if they want to. You don't get that anymore in shows.
No, yeah, did you have some, Scott?
Yeah, they give credence to disparity of thought, and they allow for those messages to have their due because there is some credence to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they allow that to live in the light for a little bit. And I was just talking to Taylor about this, the new show Terminalist, and for all its flaws and whatnot throughout the actual series, the one thing I really appreciated about it was the fact that, like, even the villains within the show had a reason and a valid reason to do what they did.
Mm-hmm.
This sounds terrible, but even if it meant betraying a single person, they went through the thought process as to how they ended up betraying the person. And it was like, okay, I get it. On the surface, it's betrayal. That's, you know, in the Christian point of view, it's sinful. But they at least walked us through that thought process, and it wasn't just like, just a flippant decision on their part. And yeah, I feel like a lot of the shows today just kind of lack that nuance in thinking.
Oh, 100%. 100%. They're just ready to call people racist or homophobes or whatever. Like, Taylor, you were watching Dawson's Creek, and a kid comes out as gay or something, and then he's met with a little bit of opposition,
mm-hmm.
but they give voice to it.
Right. No, yeah, they just portray it as like it was an honest, good faith portrayal of like a real thing that people are dealing with or whatever. But it wasn't pushed. It wasn't framed in a way that's like, we're taking a moral stance on this issue,
mm-hmm.
and you're the bad person if you, don't fall on the same side as we do, as I would argue is kind of what's being done with that clip we just watched.
Mm-hmm.
And the OC too, I've been watching that back with my wife, the 2000s, every teenager used to watch that, and they deal with abortion, they deal with some other issues, but again, it's very like it harkens to just like, hey, it's reflecting the real issues that society is contending with,
right?
And in a generally honest way that does give voice to both sides, and that's really what mass media should do. It's kind of in the same way we talk about like our mainstream media should just simply practice journalism and be fair and do their jobs and not put a spin on thing. If you're a political commentator and you have a certain bias, you can make that bias known and say whatever you want from your point of view, but mainstream media should treat the duty of reporting the news to Americans as something sacred and have journalistic integrity doing that. And I feel like with a lot of these mass media shows, we've lost any sense of neutrality. Mm-hmm. And it's happening in sports, happening across the board. And it's really, when it comes down to it, it feels like it's become weaponized by people of a certain political, ideological persuasion who are weaponizing their control over what shows are made and what gets into scripts, as opposed to before. Like, again, it was more market driven. It was more just, hey, how do we make shows that reflect the American experience, reflect human experiences, and that people will relate to and identify with, as opposed to how can we make shows that will impose our political ideology on people? And I think people can feel the difference.
Oh, 100%. We can feel the difference. And I think people are longing for something that's just politically neutral. Just like give voice to the real conversations that people are having in their day-to-day lives. And just especially with the kids program, just stop trying to infiltrate kids' minds with your ideology. I'm totally fine if you got a leftist character in a kid's show and then you have a conservative one too, and they spat at each other and go back and forth. Great. By all means, do that. But now it's just like this echo chambered, I'm spitting what I believe right back at myself and right back at you, and that's all you're going to get from this. And it's just, and in so many ways, it's gross. Like, I keep thinking about Euphoria too, of just like, young people are watching just the grossest, most disgusting, like, depiction of American life instead of what could have been really, really wholesome content. And maybe that's just not what young people are attached to anymore. I'm sure they'd watch something like Saved by the Bell and be like, this is so cheeseball and not real at all and not not a true reflection at all. But when I was a kid, I was like, oh, yeah, that is... that's life.
Yeah, we were talking about this before we recorded, but some of those shows, like the 90s shows, they're so on the nose, like that clip we watched of the boy who's like, yeah, my dad beats me.
But it must be my fault.
I thought you ran into a door. No, I ran into a door named Dad.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's almost, I mean, it's like a serious issue, but it's funny just because of how on the nose it is. Mm-hmm. And, it's, you know, it's not exactly Oscar or Emmy worthy acting. But watching it today, while watching it back today, it is like almost doubly entertaining and engaging, because you're just, it's like you're looking in through a window to another world that no longer exists. And you're like, wow, what, this, people took this seriously? This reflected that time.
Right.
This was something that was like reflected the values and people consumed and like honestly at that time. Like, it's such a fascinating thing. Like, the latest show we've gotten into, totally on a whim, we decided to watch an episode of Murder, She Wrote. Which was like, the first season was in 1984. And half of why we've stayed watching it more episodes is just because some of it is so like, just the acting, the music choices, the cinematography that they use, like
theatrical.
And the way people, the script, the dialogue, the way people, like the manners that they use with each other and everything. It's just so foreign to us that like watching this 80s show with, by today's standards, with the production value, the acting, all the stuff would just be like laughable, and the themes and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, there is like really good writing as far as like the murder mystery side of things in every episode. It's like a little mystery novel, and that on top of that, all of the like cultural differences from then to now, and it's just like really fascinating to watch. And I think that's the same thing that's happening with you at Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, and maybe we're just falling into the hole of like every generation longs for generations prior to them, and that certainly plays a key factor in this. But I just find it so hard to believe that people in 2030 and 2040 are going to be like, oh, I wish I was back in 2020, where they came out with that one HBO show where everybody showed their full frontal nakedness and, you know, cut each other and did drugs and all this stuff. Like, I just can't imagine that that's what people are going to long for. And maybe I'm going to be totally proven wrong.
There's definitely something different.
I'll even
go so far as to say, like, I've been reading J.R.R. Tolkien's biography, and Scott and I were talking about this yesterday, but I was learning about how, like, he basically took in everything, all his values that he learned from his Christianity, and blended it with everything he learned about all these very profound and over centuries old, like 1300s written Finnish and Norse mythologies. And that's what he drew from. And he talked about, as he was writing, he felt like he was describing truths and putting them into narratives, as opposed to like truths that were bigger than him, and putting them into narrative form, as opposed to like just making something up out of his own creativity. And yeah. that's why Lord of the Rings has this like richness and profundity and these themes that have endured the test of time, because they sort of bear witness to something that is more of a universal human experience through centuries, through time. And I think that's, you know, our art today sort of lacks that. And we compared it to the George R.R. Martin's
Game of Thrones.
Yep.
And it's like, it's the same level of like this epic fantasy world. And yet it just kind of, I think we know lacks, like
lacks
future generations
care.
Will look back at Game of Thrones and be like, okay, maybe some people will be like, oh, that's a great show or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's entertaining. It's got this cool fantasy world, but it's not going to have that enduring sense of like value and hearkening to something deeper as something like Lord of the Rings. And so there's definitely something to that. And I think the stuff in the 90s that we look back on today or even prior, there was more of that enduring cultural wisdom and fabric and morality that was embedded into what we were all drawing from and participating in. And now whatever's being made today just lacks that depth and lacks that moral value in any way. And I don't think, like you said, it's not going to be something that we're like, oh, I wish I lived in that time.
Right. It seems like we lack the great philosophers of our time, like people who are actually trying to find withstanding truths and inject that into the art and inject that into the things that they create. And maybe here's all something that I'll say that the left would probably love to hear. I think that is an after effect of capitalism too, of just like the money machine just running and running and running and running, and now Hollywood just spits stuff out. Like, it's not, you have an idea and you get the money for it, and 2 months later it's out and it's in production and people are already making it, and then it goes out and then it goes out and then it goes out, and people aren't satisfied with waiting for real art and waiting for something that's going to have a withstanding message anymore, and they're just so ready for what's going to be new. And that could be just our own eating of ourselves, essentially, in the creation of it. And it's sad to think, like, okay, what? I truly sit down and think, like, in 20 to 30, 40 years, what are people going to look back at this time and see? Like, what are you going to think about when you look back and think about our time in media even, or in Hollywood even? Like, who's the Marilyn Monroe of today? Who's the Audrey Hepburn? Like, who are people going to look back and go, well, that was a pivotal cultural moment?
I mean, there are like tentpole people and things that will stand out about this era, because something has to characterize it.
Right, right.
But the question is, do we look back at those figures in a like endearing sense?
Right.
Or do we look back in a sense of like, that was a symbol of the decline.
Yeah, right, right. Are we on the decline phase of time?
It certainly doesn't feel like
ascension.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, and I tweeted this the other day. It just popped in my head as we're talking, but it's a fallacy of progressivism is that morality is always evolving for the better.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily think that that's true anymore. I think technology is always improving, but just because we have more information, and Dennis Prager talks about this in The Rational Bible. He's like, he has a whole spiel on wisdom and how we've gotten tons of knowledge and people value knowledge, but they don't value wisdom.
Yep.
And we don't know what to do with all this technology that we have, the internet, we have instant access to everything, Netflix and Spotify, we have access to every song ever made, every movie we could think of.
Yep.
And we're just consumed with content, and there's not there's no depth unless you really fight against it and go out of your way to read or think deeply about where we are, where we came from, and have any sort of appreciation for that. You're just swept up in this shallowness of our time. And I think also, rather than, you know, like a lot of art used to, again, enshrine these values and ideals that are worth carrying through the centuries. And now it's like, how artfully can you denigrate America? And we just reviewed the movie Nope. And it's like, there's a lot of inherent intrinsic artistic stuff going on in there, but the deep message of the film is, as we kind of teased out in that episode, is just like this, basically reinforcing the idea that America as and the Western civilization is this racist thing that's chewing people up and spitting them out, and woe is us.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's the art back in, you know, I don't want to say back in the day, but you know, 20 years ago, the art still reflected this this honoring of the time and process that it took for morality and thought and humanity to get to where it was at that moment in time. There was this just deep sense of honor in everything, in most things that were made. It reflected that sort of approach.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, with everything being so immediate and expedient, it's almost as though we're trying to just wrap it up, ratchet up change, and try and capture what took thousands upon thousands of years to get to. And it seems as though the art that's being made now is a mimicry of the beauty of progression over the thousands of years of mankind. And now it's just, hey, let's do it right now, right now, right now, like everything else is in our life.
Yeah. And it's just like, what's the next thing that's going to get people's eyes on it? Like as the threshold builds, what's the next salacious thing that I can put out that's going to have people talking and chatting about it and wanting to watch it rather than like, this is the truth. This is a slice of life, real human experience. Throw it out there. People can relate to it and they watch it. It's not like that anymore.
No, yeah. It's a very, the words that pop into my head of our current era is to describe it as like there's a narcissism and a nihilism. It's like there's narcissism in the sense that it's all about me and my feelings and my identity and me being
character.
Offended. Mm. Yeah. And all that stuff. And the nihilism of just like nothing really has meaning or depth or beauty for it's like that it draws from anything deeper or more like nothing in the past is worth my time or worth like we're smarter than our ancestors. They were all racists and bigots and yep. They weren't as enlightened as we are now. And if I was, you know, we talked about this the other day, but if I were born in the 1800s and or 1700s, I would have been an abolitionist. And
yeah,
if I were born
yeah.
in Nazi Germany, I would have never, you know, I would have died before being put in the Hitler Youth or whatever and been indoctrinated into that. Never would have happened to me. And we just had, there's no humility. And it's just to your great peril to have that worldview and think like that and run with it. And it's, you know, I fear for where we're going if that sentiment prevails.
Yeah. And I feel like from a religious perspective, I feel like we've lost the idea of a theodrama at large within mankind. And we're so focused on ego drama.
Mm.
And that is what it's turned into. How can it, you know, inward facing, expression of yourself as opposed to inward facing calculation and searching within yourself in a positive way, not like, oh, I'm going to go find myself sort of thing. It's like, how can I improve myself because I am not as good as I could be?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for me, from the non-religious perspective, it's just like a failure to acknowledge deeper truths in life and like that there is something that has meaning here and that there are truths that can withstand time. There are ways to better yourself. There are lessons that you need to learn. Like how many TV shows are coming out right now where it's just like, the director is also the person who wrote the screenplay, and it's all about themselves and it's all about their entire lives and it all circles around them. Like there are so many, whereas I don't feel like when I was a kid, that much was happening where somebody was just writing directly about themselves and everybody outside of their character was just sort of like a prop extra to circulate through their own story. I can think of like a bunch of shows off the top of my head where it's just like a person, I've just written my life and here's my life for you. And it's all about me and you can watch it.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, I've heard you say that like the TikTok generation, that's basically, if you ask them what their career or life aspirations are, it's like, oh, well, I just want people to care about my life and watch me do things.
Mm-hmm.
and the people we idolize are the people who are doing that.
Yep.
And the influencers who live in a house in the Hollywood Hills. And it's just like this generation of navel gazing narcissism. And I am the be all end all of existence. And I'm the most interesting thing and the most important thing in the world.
Dude,
and
yeah, I can think of so many
themselves
offhands.
Like that.
Yeah, like the, and this is not to call out these people or look down on them because it is just the nature of our time. But like the David Dobriks of the world, the Emma Chamberlains, even though I think Emma Chamberlain is super self-aware of where she's at right now, the Emily Maricos of our time. There are so many people who have just garnered careers off of just filming their daily lives, and they are just normal American people.
Mm-hmm.
However, people love to just watch somebody play out their own lives, and these ideas of being the girl boss and being the main character, like I'm the main character in all, or he is the moment, he's the main character. these things are just being sown into us, and this idea of just like romanticizing what is your normal life instead of looking at your normal life and trying to find deeper truths outside of it is just wild to me. I think we could talk about this for hours.
We could, yeah. But yeah, the people watching those influencers, it's like that is their value structure is the same as what they're seeing on TV. And so that's the appetite to see that comes from the same perspective about yourself. I want to be the main character in my own story. And that's what I aspire to in life. And again, just reading biographies of men who lived 100 years ago, there's a very clear delineation. Like they went through life, they did their job, they did their family duties and came home and then stayed up till 2 a.m. reading texts that they were pulling from and writing and thinking and just processing all where their place is in the universe and having a humility before history and the great works of literature and art that came before them. And they're learning those and internalizing them and reconciling it with the today. And what does it look like to take that wisdom and apply it today? Mm-hmm. That's how they operated. And the difference between something like that and where we are now, where it's just like the world is me. I've said this before. Like I just feel like I'm not interesting enough to be the be all end all of my own existence.
No,
I would be bored in 2 seconds.
Yeah, and it's something that I think you learn, and like we probably have not even learned the full extent of it. You learn as you get older, just like your place in the world and how just like infinitely small it actually is, and how there's so much more outside of yourself, and that's what you should be focusing on. Like I'm headed to London tomorrow, and I just cannot wait to just like sit in the history of the places that I'm going to be in, and like go to history museums and look at St. Paul's Cathedral and just be like, wow, so much happened before me, and so many people whose lives had so much more meaning, or at least like such a greater search than mine has had, have walked in these places. And I feel like people don't.
Yeah, and while you're saying that too, we're talking about Saved by the Bell, Murder, She Wrote. A thought that's been in the back of my head watching these is like, okay, at the time, like, what's his name? Mark Palm, the actor who plays Zach Morris, for example. Mm-hmm. Okay, in the late 80s, early 90s, dude's top of the world.
Mm-hmm.
All them, they're at the forefront of all of the cultural attention in the world. Yeah. And, you know, they happen to be living at that time. And now they're basically like an afterthought. No one really cares.
Mm-hmm.
I think about that with even like what we're doing now in our show. Yep. And it's like, we have some attention, people are watching us. But it's like, at the end of the day, meaningless, the Ecclesiastes says everything's dust chasing after the wind. And I think that I think we take ourselves way too seriously, I think is what I'm trying to say. And no matter what time you're in, no matter how famous you get, if your life isn't attached to any deeper meaning than that, and if that's the be all end all, is like me being something important right now, and history does not care. And you'll be gone just as fast as everyone else who's gotten famous and was a household name back in the day. What are you doing that's connected to something bigger than just yourself, no matter how big you can get?
Dude, yeah, your life has to be tied to something other than that. Like, I tell people all the time, because a lot of people ask, well, oh my gosh, isn't your life so different now that you're working for PragerU? Don't all these people stop you and want to talk to you? And I'm like, well, yeah, but it doesn't mean much. Like, aside from meeting really great, nice people who have a shared message with you, fame and all this stuff of like young people wanting to be TikTokers or on TV shows and all these things, it simply means that more people who are living on the earth right now know your name and know who you are and know what you look like. That's literally all that it means. They do not know you as a person. They don't really know anything outside of what you share with them. And that's why so many people who are so famous and have garnered so much false happiness from being famous are truly depressed, and they commit suicide, or they abuse drugs, or are super promiscuous and do all these crazy things, is because they thought they were going to find fulfillment in something that was never going to give them that. And that seems to be just the tagline of our culture right now, is trying to find fulfillment in something that is never going to give that to you.
Yeah, very true. And I think that's the theme of our podcast
today. Yeah, I think that is the theme of our podcast. We started with Saved by the Bell. We ended with find a deeper meaning and become a philosopher.
You can see it there. You can see it in Saved by the Bell.
You really can. You can see it in Saved by the Bell. Like every time I've been watching these shows now, I'm just like so not attached to watching them, but just so hung up on the fact that there's so much of a deeper meaning that people are trying to express in these just average everyday things that you would have watched as a kid. And I think back of like who I was as a child, and you'll never know how much you learned by simply just watching these things play out in front of you, but it's got to be so much.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about the depth and stuff in these things, but it's not necessarily that the writers had all this like profound stuff that they were trying to insert in there, but I think the lesson is you have a value system, whether you realize it or not. Mm-hmm. You have something that you value more than anything else in the world. That is dictating a lot of your other decisions. And so whether that's the approval of other people or this becoming some great TikTok star or whatever it is, like a lot of your decisions in life are downstream from what you value most.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that is culturally informed and it makes its way into our art and mainstream shows and all this stuff. But I think it's worth stopping and reflecting of like, okay, well, what is my dictating my decisions, and am I being drugged by the foot through life through propaganda on TV or on social media, or do I actually have a informed way of thinking about the world and my place in it and what is most valuable? And anyway, I think that's a thought
summation
I'll leave you with.
Yeah, it was a genuine search for character building too at that point in time. Uh-huh. And now it's a telling of character and what you should be and how you should think, as opposed to back then. Yeah, they were genuinely searching for that to improve themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let's keep it alive, guys. Let's make sure that something is created that is an improvement upon what was created before us. And on that note, I think that's where we're going to close out today's show. Thank you for coming along on the journey with us. If you made it this far and got to the end where we got into the philosophical discussion of meaning and finding it, guys, comment down below. What was life like when you were a child? What were you watching? Were you getting something from it? Is it different than life is now? Or are we just some boomers who are very detached from what people of today's time are invested in? Back in my day when Saved by the Bell came on. Mm. Is that who we are right now? Let us know in the comments down below. If there's a point that I made that you know, you disagree with, put that in the comments down below. If there's a point that we should have made that we didn't, put that in the comments down below. And if there's something where you completely agree with us, drop that in the comments down below. Let's spark a healthy conversation about these subject matters. Thank you so much. Please like, subscribe, click the notification bell to be notified every single time we post a video for you guys, which is quite often, every single day. If you're getting that notification bell. And thank you so much for watching. Have a fantastic weekend.